From Fox News, it's The Candidates with Brett Baer.
On July 28, 2017, only 6 months after President Trump was sworn into office, former Maryland Congressman John Delaney wrote an op-ed in the Washington Post announcing his candidacy for president, along with a social media campaign titled Why I'm Running.
If we allow ourselves to be divided and we let our political debate deteriorate into an us versus them, we will all fall short. But if we take these challenges head on, the future is ours.
The three-term Democratic congressman and multimillionaire businessman was the first Democrat to throw his hat in the ring. Fox News Radio's Jared Halperin has more on the former Maryland congressman.
A businessman who amassed a fortune then came to politics late. It's not an unprecedented path to the presidency, and it's the path former Maryland Congressman John Delaney hopes to take next year.
I started two companies from scratch that focused on lending money to small to mid-sized businesses. Basically, I built two companies that were very much admired. They were based here in Maryland.
In an interview this year heard on Fox News Radio's From Washington podcast, Delaney told me his firm provided loans to companies often ignored by big banks, a venture that built a lot of wealth for Delaney, too.
You know, I started my things from scratch, kind of bootstrapped everything, and I'm very proud of what my businesses did, how they conducted themselves, and how they were viewed in the community.
Delaney made his first run for Congress in 2012, taking advantage of a newly drawn House district in Maryland more favorable to Democratic candidates. He won re-election in 2014 and 2016. During his 6 years in the House, Delaney had a reputation for working across the aisle, viewed as a moderate Democrat, sometimes breaking with his party to vote with Republicans.
My focus in Congress, just like my focus as president, is to get things done and find solutions. And I'll stand behind every single vote I took in Congress.
The Maryland Democrats says the bipartisan credentials don't diminish a progressive platform.
You know, I was given the Legislator of the Year Award by the Citizens Climate Lobby, which is the biggest grassroots climate change group in the country.
Delaney was the first Democrat to join the 2020 presidential race, announcing his bid in July 2017 and foregoing re-election in the House last year.
You know, I actually really enjoyed being in Congress. It was an amazing privilege. You know, I didn't leave because I didn't like it. I left because I wanted to run for president. It didn't feel fair to my constituents to be spending all my time in Iowa, New Hampshire, when I'm supposed to be representing them in the Congress.
Delaney has spent a lot of time in early voting states, Iowa and New Hampshire, a strategy to boost his name ID. On Capitol Hill, Jared Halperin, Fox News.
Jared, thanks. We now look to our panel. Amy Walter, national editor of Cook Political Report, Charles Hurd, opinion editor for The Washington Times, and Chris Steierwalt, Fox News politics editor, to talk about John Delaney. You know, he was the first one in. He's been on the ground, spent a lot of money, done a couple of Sunday shows, but people are not, you know, knowing exactly who John Delaney is, but they may in Iowa. Amy, what about him?
Well, he spent how many days in Iowa now? I think he has a full operation there. He's one of those candidates. He might have been to every county by now. He has this sort of Jimmy Carter theory of, you know, if you just hunker down in the early states, let people know that you care about them, that you're not just flying in as, you know, as the caucus comes nearer, that they will reward you for your hard work. I think that is kind of a antiquated way to think about the Iowa caucuses or the process in general. But fundamentally, what he's banking on is the fact that Democrats are going to be fighting amongst themselves on the left. They're going to push whoever the candidate who is the most left in their views, whether it's a Bernie Sanders or somebody like this, who becomes sort of toxic to the middle ground, those suburban voters who provided Democrats with their majority in the House in the last election. And John Delaney becomes the big tent candidate who has socially liberal, middle of the road, Democratic values, but is not going to push the party too far to the left. And that's the only kind of person who can beat Donald Trump. In fact, I was just going through his Twitter feed and he responded to the responded to the Howard Schultz 60 Minutes interview, arguing that, you know, he's he's what you get, Schultz, if we nominate a Democrat who is too liberal. So the best way to ensure that Howard Schultz doesn't run and siphon votes away from Democrats is to put up a middle-of-the-road Democrat.
Yeah. And so, Chris, that's the pitch he's making. I should point out that our kids went to the same school. I know the former congressman. And he makes a case that he's a businessman, that is a conservative Democrat when it comes to finances, but socially more on the left. His pitch is solutions. And he was the first in the AI caucus in Congress, artificial intelligence. He's talking to groups at pizza ranches in Iowa that seem to be receptive, but I don't know how he's stacking up in the polls as far as Iowa.
He has found out also then the pizza ranch doesn't have very good pizza.
No, it's horrible.
But
the
fried chicken is not bad. It
really?
Is not bad. The fried pizza ranch fried chicken, not bad. Look, there are no gatekeepers anymore. There was a time, the last person elected, last member of Congress, or the last person to go straight from Congress to the White House was James A. Garfield. So it's been a minute. There are no gatekeepers anymore. And the parties are both very, very weak. And there would have been a time that moderate congressmen from Maryland who announced presidential runs or were talking about announcing a presidential run would have gotten a call from someone who said, now. You're lovely, and it's great. I wish you all the best. And we have a big, bright future in store for you. But don't get out there and mess this thing up for the real candidates because you'll harm us on the way. We need to unify here, not divide. But we have two, three members of Congress or former members of Congress running. We've got mayors. We've got all kind of people running because if you can go from being the host of the Celebrity Apprentice to being the president of the United States, why can't you go from the House? And if you're Delaney or you're Tulsi Gabbard or if you're Pete
Buttigieg.
Yes.
The South Bend mayor.
The mayor of South Bend, Indiana. If you're Pete Buttigieg or any of these people, why can't I run? And there's no gatekeeper. There's no party to tell you not. So if you're Delaney, you say, I'm spending out of my own pocket, and he's doing the Chris Dodd. I'm going to Iowa. I am here. I'm looking at you people.
But what about what Amy mentioned, which was, you know, his case, which is if the party goes super left, and that's where the power is, that's where everything is heading, and if this is a knockdown drag out on the left of the party, then – maybe the party at some point says, well, who's going to beat Donald Trump?
And look, there will be a survivor. There will be survivors out of this smash up. So as these lanes collapse on each other and we go from 22 candidates to five candidates and this consolidation takes place, there will be survivors. And I would just say of him, I would say a lot of these second and third tier candidates, you would say, look for the people who get better at running. That's what I always care about, what I always look for. Donald Trump started out, and I said, what? But then as he went, he figured out the game pretty quickly, and he got better at it as he went. Jeb Bush, on the other hand, got worse at it as he went.
Fred Thompson, remember him?
That yeah, was a, like that was a bad, a, week, a misspent weekend.
Yeah.
Richard James Perry,
oops. So look at who gets better as they go. And certainly he falls into the category, Delaney falls in the category of people who, look, he could get out there and have an impressive debate showing, he could have a good day, and he get a little boomlet and catch a little fire, and who knows? This is what's fun about 2020 is it's who could say. And for Democrats, they did not enjoy having the future written for them with Hillary Clinton in 2016. I think they're going to enjoy savoring their choices.
Mm-hmm. Charlie?
Yeah, I mean, not only is he running the Jimmy Carter campaign, but he enthusiastically talks about it and he gets very excited about it, which ought to be sort of an indication that that's probably not the smartest strategy. But the real reason, of course, that that people don't run from the House is, of course, the ratings of C-SPAN of the House are so much lower than Celebrity Apprentice is much better, is much higher. But the idea of a guy like this breaking through, I have a hard time imagining it, no matter how sober-minded a lot of his ideas are and things like that. But the real problem, to answer your question, is that the reason that I don't think it works, that he winds up being sort of the sage, sober answer after the party has been pulled way to the left, is I think the party has kind of gone far to the left. And I think that the reason that so many people are running like crazy, the reason that Chuck Schumer will never be able to hold his caucus together for the next 2 years is because all these people are racing after their base, the base. And again, the people that held these, they're now regarded as hugely antiquated views on illegal immigration or gay marriage. They were held by Barack Obama just a few years back, or mm-hmm. Hillary Clinton just a few years back. And now it's you're drummed out of the party if you have any hesitations about these things. And so I just think that the reason it doesn't come up for him is at the end of the day, that seems to me to be where the party is.
I would have thought that had the midterms gone the other way, and let's say Republicans held the House and picked up another seat in the Senate, that his chances would have increased because mm-hmm. the party would have then said, holy cow, what we're doing isn't working. Well, it didn't. And there was a blue wave of sorts, clearly took over the House, and the people who were in it were far more to the left than they had been.
Except this is really the interesting thing. You know, there are a lot of folks on the left, progressive community, that said, we have to make sure we get primary candidates who win these open primaries, mm-hmm. defeat the more moderate, in the same way we saw the Tea Party do that in 2010, right? They knocked off a number of incumbents who they thought were too moderate or too accommodating to President Obama. But that didn't really happen on the left. You saw all those moderate to conservative Democrats, Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota or Joe Manchin in West Virginia. They didn't get primaried. They didn't get a serious primary challenge. And on the House side, there were a couple of upsets. Obviously, Ocasio-Cortez is the most famous in New York. But that was as much about her, Joe Crowley, the incumbent, inability to see this coming as it was a fight over ideology. And when you look at really why Democrats won in 2018, those 40 seats that they picked up Republican seats with candidates, some of whom have a very moderate record, but most of whom just didn't really talk about ideology. They talked very specifically about kitchen table issues. It was health care. It was the economy. It was tax cuts that Republicans passed that aren't helping regular people. They're just helping corporate America. That's what they focused on. So they didn't have that inner fight. And I think Chris made this point earlier about, you know, what happens when you're the out party. It's really fun sometimes when you're the out party because being unified against one enemy is pretty easy to do. It's really hard when you have all the power. And it's your job to not just unify against a single enemy, but you have to bring this very disparate group together in a proactive way to actually do something. And so this is where Democrats still have an advantage, I think, in that they are not tearing themselves apart to find the most pure candidate. It's the bigger threat to Democrats, I think you can say this, but this is the way that Democrats in Congress feel and Democratic voters feel, is Donald Trump more than anything else.
But is there a, you know, when you ask people in polls, when you talk to them, they're like, oh, you know, I wish that there could be more bipartisanship.
Right.
I wish that they could get stuff done. I wish that the both parties could work together. And is there a hunger for a centrist option or is there not? Is it a joke? Is it all just base stirring in this presidential race, or is there a hunger for a middle?
Americans love compromise, and unfortunately, what they often mean in compromise is that you need to give up your damn fool idea and start agreeing with me,
right.
And then we'll have a good compromise.
That's right.
The two parties have gotten so good at extracting votes out of their respective bases that they have gotten lazy about being persuaders. Candidates in both parties have figured out that persuasion, when we think about George W. Bush, we think about Bill Clinton making a pitch to the middle, persuading this persuadable third in this country, say, hey, you may not usually vote for a Democrat, but maybe I'm your kind of Democrat, and maybe you ought to hear me out. Those are lost arts right now. There is nobody who's doing that. John Delaney makes a powerful point, and he also makes a powerful point about the danger to Democrats. You leave this much on the table, whether it's Howard Schultz from Starbucks or somebody is going to say, huh, look at all that. Somebody left all this money piled up right here in the middle of the table, and they're going to come in and rake it off. And the Democrats will be very sorry if they do that. And if they have a nominee that either is too zany or becomes too zany in the process of running, they're going to just be absolutely laid out for an independent run by somebody.
What does it take for John Delaney to succeed in this race?
There's a lot of mean things that I wanted to say right now, and I'm not going to say any of them. We'll just say it's a long process, and we'll see what happens.
Okay. Dark horse is what you're saying.
But isn't the real lesson from 2016 for Democrats the fact that, first of all, the party was incredibly powerful and managed to keep the nominee that the party wanted and managed to brush off an insurgent campaign from the inside from somebody who was really excited. And I don't know how the party manages to keep that from, maintain that kind of power if something like that were to happen again. But secondly, the other huge lesson I would think for Democrats is that when they went with the candidate they didn't really want and nobody was excited about, they lost. And they lost this election they were never supposed to lose. And it makes me wonder if the days of a dated Carrie, a dated Dean but married Carrie in 2004.
Shudder.
If those days aren't over and they're just like, screw this, man, I'm gonna marry the first one that is crazy enough and says all the, you know.
That's how Charlie's wife picked him.
That's right.
And with that, panel, I think we'll end it there. Off to the pizza ranch in Iowa. Thank you. That will do it for this week. You can hear more of this series at foxnewspodcast.com or wherever you download podcasts. Make sure to leave a rating and a review. We want to hear from you. So for Amy and Charles and Chris, I'm Brett Baer, and we'll see you next time.